Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. Jeff, are you in mourning like I am?
No. I got over it, Jim. I'm fine. I'm just fine. Nothing to worry about here.
Let me ask you a question. If you asked your wife how she's doing and she said, fine, just like you did, what would that mean?
Probably that I'm in big trouble.
We are following up on Penn State football's 27-24 semifinal loss in the college football players to Notre Dame. Jeff, I don't know if it would have been easier if they got beat soundly, but losing last second field goal after a terrible interception, terrible throw by Drew Aller, after a not very good game from Drew Aller, is there any tougher loss than that?
It is brutal. And, you know, the thing for me, Jim, is it's just one of those things where you don't know when an opportunity like this is going to come around again. And listen, it could be next season. I mean, that is certainly possible. And Drew Aller, I mean, what a redemption story that would be if he gets this team to the national championship next year. And that could be. But you know, there's a chance Penn State doesn't make the playoffs next year, right? We just don't know yet. Too many variables, too many things. And it's just in the moment, it is so crushing for those kids. And to me, that's the thing that I think, you know, you really hurt for those kids. And when you see, and yes, to me, they're still kids. I'm in my mid-50s. These guys are, you know, the oldest, even in this COVID era, you know, what, maybe 24 or so. Listen, it was such a special season, and it was such a special team with so many, I think, just wonderful individual stories, both in terms of athletic heroics, with what Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter did as well or better than anybody in the country at their positions, to a guy like Nick Dawkins, who just stuck it out, was a leader, and showed up huge here for his final run as a collegiate player. And again, there's all kinds of stories about the journeys. And for the guys who this was their final game in a Penn State uniform, again, knowing how close they were to achieving their dreams, I mean, it hurts as a fan and it stinks as a fan, but I just think about those guys, and they know, I mean, they could taste it. They know they were good enough to win a national title, and they don't get the opportunity to play for it. It's just really hard. And you know, every season is a season, obviously, unto itself. There's no team in the college ranks that's ever exactly the same one season to the next. And so for this group of guys, this collective, to be that close, to have done all of the things that they did together, and then, again, be so doggone close and come up short, it hurts. And I think, you know, all of the accolades that Notre Dame reaped last night were deserved. I that is a team that had tremendous depth and was on display, showed tremendous resiliency on display, a program that put all the pieces together and I think did it the right way with their head coach. It's just that I think you can say the same thing all the way along the line about Penn State. It's the nature of sports. One team has to win, one team has to lose. It stinks when you're the team that loses, and it's obviously exhilarating for Notre Dame because that's the result that they obviously wanted. And again, I think they earned it. I just, man, there's a part of me that just feels like both teams, both programs earned it.
Well, it was a heck of a game, but the one name you didn't mention in that, Jeff, was James Franklin. And I feel very bad for him. he's worked very hard to get to this point, and he's had to deal with such criticism, that whole, you know, against top five teams, his record now, I believe, is 1 in 57,538 losses, okay? And he's got to hear that again continually. And this effort to get to the national championship, also, I think for him individually, the opportunity to win a national championship as an African American. And I'm sure he's very much an admirer of Marcus Freeman and what he's doing at Notre Dame. But to see such a young man in his first couple of years at Notre Dame get that opportunity that he's worked so hard for to reach, I feel bad for James Franklin, because I can't find something that he did in coaching that team last night where I could say, you know what? This is on James Franklin. I can't see that, Jeff. Can you?
I can't. And not only that, I think on both sides of the ball, Penn State was extremely well coached, extremely well prepared. And I think the coaches put the players in positions to have the opportunity to go make plays. And there were just a few instances where they didn't come up with it. I think much more often than not, Penn State made plays. And I think you could say the same thing again on the other side of the ball for Notre Dame. You know, obviously, Drew Aller feels horrible. It was obviously a bad throw in a bad spot. He did not have the game that he wanted to. And, you know, I think there's several things that factored into that as well. But, you know, it stinks because, you know, to me, and there's certainly other plays that you can point to, that there's just three plays that to me are just going to haunt that team and the fans of this Penn State team for a very, very long time. One was it was a great play call that down at the goal line, and there's a wide open Nicholas Singleton who had himself a fantastic game, but he's, you know, wide open, just needs to catch the ball and get across the goal line. It is not a well-thrown ball by Drew Aller, no question about that, but it was a catchable ball, so I think, you know, some blame to lay there with both players. But, I mean, Kotelnicki's play call was great. They had the play. And they just didn't get the touchdown there, had to settle for the field goal. I think the, you know, if you want to call it misfortune of two defensive backs slipping on one play and Notre Dame being able to capitalize on that mistake and that opportunity. And then obviously the most glaring one, the Drew Aller interception, where, you know, his decision-making is kind of what you've hung your hat on for Penn State this year. And in the most crucial moment, you know, he just makes a horrible mistake, and obviously, again, feels horrible about it. And the hope is, if you're Penn State, that Drew Aller comes back and has a chance to have a redemptive run in the playoffs next year. But that just feels so far away as even a remote possibility in the moment.
And, you know, Jeff, the few plays that you brought up, it's interesting. In every football game that comes down to a last-second field goal, you could find 3, 4, 5 plays. And if the game had gone the other way, I'm sure every Notre Dame fan would be talking about the two interceptions that got called back. You know, and that would be understandable. I do believe that they were good calls.
I do too.
And they were also, I think, consistent with, I didn't mean to start getting off on this tangent, but now that I've started, the calls for pass interference, where they were consistent, Jeff, was if you do not, as a defender, turn back and look for the ball, they're going to call it. They kind of let some of the other physical, you know, some of the other contact go, but I thought they were pretty consistent when they did make the call. And one of them was actually holding, and which was pretty obvious, but the other one, which they called as pass interference, it was the same deal. The defender did not turn around. And by the way, he was not the guy who made the interception.
Yeah, and listen, I think in both cases, I think the officiating, I mean, again, we'll be able to quibble and fans are going to think one way or the other. I'm with you. I thought it was consistent. The lack of holding calls, whatever you think about it, again, both ways, it was consistent. They just pretty much decided they were going to keep the flags in the hip pocket for the most part regarding that. So I think at the end of the day, you can live with it because of the consistency, or you ought to be able to live with it because of the consistency.
And in talking about the plays, I think the one play that got lost in there that could have been a huge difference was the fumble where Abdul Carter was the first guy there.
Yep.
When it was played live, I saw, and I don't think I recognized that it was Carter, just a blue jersey was the first guy from the first live feed. Looked like he fell on it, looked like an obvious recovery for Penn State. So I was actually very surprised when it wasn't. And that's another one of those plays. Boy, the bounce just doesn't go your way.
Yep. And again, every team, we've talked about this for as long as I've been covering sports, every championship team, that you, there's a little luck that goes into it. Now you can argue, right, well, it's self-created luck and all of that. That's fine. It's just, somewhere along the way, there's a bounce that goes your way. It's just, again, the nature of sports. And when you're in competitive games and you're playing with a ball that's shaped the way a football is, again, sometimes it bounces your way, sometimes it goes the other way. I really thought both teams showed tremendous resiliency and resolve in the face of real adversity in a championship moment. And again, credit to Notre Dame. It was a great interception. It was a horrible decision and a bad throw, but it was also a remarkable catch. And again, Notre Dame capitalized on the opportunities when they were there enough to pull out the win.
They did. And it's interesting. I don't know if you ever see ESPN on their website. For each game, they do that graph that shows probability of winning during the game. This thing was a roller coaster up and down, you know, to Penn State to Notre Dame, to Penn State to Notre Dame, of course, ultimately at the very end, Jeff. All right, we've got a lot more to cover on this game, whether we like it or not, Jeff. Whether you like it or not, we've got to do it. Our obligation. We'll continue this after the break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is Jim Galante. He's Jeff Byers. It's quarter number two of our show. We are talking about Penn State's loss in the semifinal to the hated Notre Dame Fighting Irish, 27-24. You know, I say that, Jeff, but in talking about Notre Dame, this, they're a likable team right now. They have a likable coach. The players, everything I've seen and heard from them, they're well-coached, well-disciplined. They've earned it. I know early in the year they got justifiably so slaughtered for that loss to Northern Illinois. And when folks were saying, that's it, they're done, they should be eliminated from any playoff possibility just for losing that one game, did they not come back, play a wonderful season since then, obviously won every game since, with the pressure that any one of those losses and they would have been out of the playoffs?
There's no question. I mean, what Notre Dame has done in the wake of that loss, which could have been a devastating loss. I mean, that is a loss. We talk about, you know, James Franklin talks about don't let one loss become two. It would be very easy to let a loss like that and the noise that it was around that Notre Dame program affect you. And if it affected them, it was to galvanize that locker room and to make the rest of the season a mission to prove a point that that was not the real Notre Dame. And, you know, point proven, point made. Again, the similarities, I certainly don't begrudge Marcus Freeman talking about, you know, the resolve of his team and their ability to keep grinding it out and finding a way and all of it. It's just I would say the same thing again about Penn State. And you know, Penn State made one more mistake in a critical moment. And again, Notre Dame capitalized on it. And that's the thing. And that's often what these types of games come down to, is a mistake or two. But then you have to have the other team capitalize on it in order for it to mean something. And again, a couple of bad breaks, a couple of great plays, and from Penn State's perspective, a couple of disappointing plays. And again, it's just such a razor thin margin when you're at this level. And I just think that's why the hurt here is going to last a very long time for everybody surrounding that Penn State program, because they know, I mean, they know deep in their soul, they were good enough to get this accomplished. They did everything, I think, in terms of preparation. I think the game plan was right. And it just slips through the fingers, and again, they miss it by a whisker, and I do think that makes the hurt that much more substantial for, again, everybody surrounding that program.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Jeff, we've got to talk about Drew Aller's performance. Now, I've been one of his biggest fans, biggest advocates, and even prior to this game and throughout the season, I've advocated for let Drew Aller loose, let him go. Let, you know, when he's been put in a position, whether it's like the USC game when they're behind a couple touchdowns and they needed him to perform, he did it. There were other games where, because it's the end of the first half, time running out, 2-minute offense, he's been able to do it. And particular in this game, in the end, with the really bad interception, it's funny. Greg McElroy's been getting a hard time from people because as Penn State got the ball, he puts out, you know, the play-by-play. McDonough asks him, what do you do here? How do you play this?
Yep.
Well, you go for it. You got to trust Drew Aller. He takes care of the ball, you know, and it's just terrible timing that, you know, I think it was the announcer jinx. Essentially, I think that McElroy caused it to happen, but I'm there watching the game saying, you know what? You're exactly right. This is a guy who's done this and done it well. But if you're a fan who just was watching this game and this is all you've seen of Drew Aller, you saw the worst of Drew Aller with this game. And unfortunately, it's something he's going to have to live with.
Yeah, and again, the hope is, from the Penn State perspective, that what this causes him to do is kind of double down on the efforts and going to clean up everything I can mechanically, work even harder, all of the things that you want a leader to do. And I suspect to a very large degree, that's exactly what Drew Aller is going to do. He'll use this to fuel his fire for next season, and certainly you hope that's the case. But again, you don't know. You're hoping you get maybe many moments like this throughout his career, but you don't know when or if those moments are going to come again. And so, yeah, when you don't capitalize on it, and yeah, I mean, it was a bad mistake in a crucial moment. But it, as you said, it was just a tough night all around for Drew Aller. He just, just had a bad night. And I thought the offensive line showed up strong, did a very good job against a really good Notre Dame defense. But Aller missed some opportunities. Everybody's going to talk about that interception for a long time, and understandably so. But there were some other big opportunities that were missed throughout that game. It's just you're going to have to wear it. And, if you're a competitor, and I think Aller is a competitor, you use it as fuel, and hopefully he comes out and just has an absolutely spectacular senior season.
You know, Jeff, when you – aren't we reaching the point with Drew Aller? And again, I'm one of his biggest fans, one of his biggest advocates. And I think he's come so far in these couple years that he's been the starter, improved in so many ways this year. But here's the big but. We're now getting a larger sample size of these big games.
Yep.
Last season, Michigan and Ohio State. If you want to throw in the bowl game, Ole Miss. This year in the losses, Ohio State again, Oregon, although he actually, did a lot of really good things in that game. But this game, if you start looking at the percentages and the eye test from these games, he's really not uplifted his game when he was most needed against the biggest opponents.
No, and the thing is, he led them – when it felt like Notre Dame had all of the momentum, right? He made a couple of nice throws and got them back down the field. But to your point, when it was win or lose, it was make or break in the game definitively. Yeah, I mean, there's just no way around it. He came up short, and it's not the first time. And again, I'm not I really am not one of these guys that, well, he hasn't done it yet, so that's just who he is. But it is who he's been to this point, and it is a concern. And I think, it's a concern for Drew Aller. I mean, he obviously wants to be the guy that shows up big in these moments and wants to be known for that, and any quarterback does. And so, again, you hope that he doesn't get overly down on himself, that it's like, all right, let's go back to work. I said I'm coming back for another year, and I'm going to make it mean something for me and for the program. And if he does that, again, he has a ton of talent. Hopefully he uses this in the right way, the right direction, and makes another big leap forward. But, yeah, I think now it's a little bit of a head game too, where, man, if they get into a crunch situation – next year, regardless of what the numbers are up to that point, and regardless of how good hopefully he's looked up to that point, it's going to be, yeah, and now you got to go prove it. And we're just going to wait and see what happens. I mean, that's all you can do right now if you're a Penn State fan.
How much of his struggles in these big games could you put on the wide receiver situation?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. That's a really good question, and I don't know the definitive answer. It feels to me like a good bit, Jim. The receiving core as a whole, I did think got better from the Ohio State game on, but that's not exactly high praise. Better than being pretty abysmal, okay, better. But yeah, that group, they just don't have the dynamic playmaker. You kept thinking maybe Omari Evans could become that, but it didn't happen. And even with the, they obviously are trying to address it, and you look at the transfer portal and the guys they have coming in, but I don't think they have their guy that, all right, boy, this is the difference maker, the Jeremiah Smith, and you're talking about the best receiver in the country. I get it, but for Penn State, I think to take that final step here and become a national championship team, not just a national title contender, part of that equation is you've got to at least have a big-time clutch receiver And, you know, they just haven't had that the last couple of years.
No, and you lose Tyler Warren, obviously, and that changes the whole receiver dynamic also. And sometimes I wonder if Tyler Warren is a bit of a crutch for Drew Aller. You know, it's like, when in doubt, well, I'll just go to Tyler Warren, you know. And you because he's earned that trust. He's earned that, hey, throw him a 50-50 ball and he's got a better than 50-50 chance of getting it.
Yeah, and listen, I think that the tight end room is going to be outstanding again. So I don't think that's – you might not have Tyler Warren, but I think between the three guys they have as kind of the leaders next year, I think they're going to be fine there. Provided they stay healthy, obviously the caveat. And listen, I know they lose – some big talent and big leadership off of that offensive line. But I kind of have faith now that that group is going to be solid at the very least moving forward. I think Aller hopefully takes another step here. And again, to me, it's as much of a mental game in terms of in those clutch situations that you're hoping he works on for next year.
All right, Jeff, that's the final word for quarter number two. We still have lots more to go when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter three. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking all things Penn State football, specifically the loss to Notre Dame 27-24 last night in the college football semifinal. Jeff, news breaking today. Abdul Carter is going to be foregoing his final year of eligibility in college and headed for the NFL draft. How surprised are you?
Absolutely shocked, Jim, as I think everybody was. The assumption obviously was that this guy, who's probably a top five pick, would come back and risk injury and play another year at Penn State. No, obviously, I think Abdul Carter rightfully is heading to the NFL, and I think will continue the wonderful legacy of number 11 here. It was kind of cool seeing LeVar Arrington and Micah Parsons and him on the field pregame together, kind of having some fun with that great 11 legacy. So, yeah, not a surprise. I'm really curious to see, Jim, now with Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen, what the ultimate decisions are there. And listen, I don't think it's devastating if they both decide to go with the what we have seen now build up in that running backs room. But if one or both of them come back, it certainly, to me, changes the thoughts of, okay, yep, this team is kind of immediately right back in the national championship picture anyway, heading into next season. Although, you know, the defense is going to be retooled a good bit. But again, I think if they can get some of the young talent to step up along the defensive line, I think the rest of that defense should be, very, very good again next year.
Well, just to hit on that a little bit before we get back to Abdul Carter and the game that he played, is kind of that dynamic has changed about when you should go to the NFL draft. When you're Abdul Carter, you're going to be a top five pick. In no matter how you frame it, how you shape it, you go. you go to the NFL. That's how it works. All of a sudden, some of these other positions, like, well, running back, which is very few running backs go in the first round, let alone the first couple rounds. And now that you get compensated in college, might a Nick Singleton, who, you know, let's face it, we all, especially as a running back, you don't want to get too much wear on the tires, get to the NFL, but might they just say, you know what, the economics of it now makes sense to come back for another year?
Yeah. And that is, I mean, I'm still having trouble getting my head around the the monetary opportunities here. And yes, I mean, with what those two have achieved, I don't know exactly what the payday will be, and I'm sure that's part of what they're assessing right now for returning next year. But it, I do think it makes it a more palatable decision for these guys to, oh, you know what, let me give it another run. Let's run this back, especially, again, when they were as close as they were to the ultimate objective in college football. And, you know, I think the fact that they – what I'll be really curious to see is if – one of them decides to go and the other decides to hang back, and just then kind of the thought process with each of what went into that decision. Cause I almost feel like they're going to go either both out or both back, but I think it's, you know, the more I think about it, it's like, well, it could be very likely that one of them, just with the circumstances they're seeing and the opportunity that they believe is there, may make one decision and the other may make the other. I don't know. It's very interesting to me, and it's just such a different dynamic now with the money that's floating around college football that, yeah, a lot of these decisions, as you said, if you're not a top five or, you know, a kind of surefire first round pick, I think these decisions become much more difficult in terms of, hey, what's right here for me as an individual to capitalize in every way, athletically, financially, and again, just the overall approach to a career in the sport.
And Jeff, I know it'll be a huge topic of conversation on this show and everywhere else in the next couple of weeks, but I think the fascinating point, the running backs, to me, is so fascinating because, like you said, there's both of them there. And the first instinct might be they either both go or both stay. But might you, you know, if you're Catron Allen, I don't think, you know, he has that speed that Nick Singleton does, which will help Singleton, you know, through the combine and his draft status. So if you're Catron Allen, do you say, well, instead of me being 1A, I could come back and be one, you know, number one. And, you know, in where he's projected to go in the draft, it may be economically smarter to stick around another season. And the other variable to this equation is, what has he done to his draft status by playing so well over the playoffs and the, you know, game against Oregon and then through the playoffs? So there are just so many different pieces to this, Jeff, that we just don't know.
Yeah. And you know, it would be interesting to be in the discussions too, in terms of just kind of what they're thinking about, what their families are thinking about, what the coaches and the other advisors are, you know, projecting and seeing for them, both here at Penn State, and again, financially, but also, you know, in terms of, hey, this is how this could play out when you look at the offense we have coming back next year versus, yeah, this is kind of where we project you in the NFL draft. These are the possibilities that we see for you there. There's a lot to digest there for those two individuals, and obviously the impact that those decisions will have on the program next year. And again, if they both leave, it's not like Penn State's going to sit here and say, well, there go our chances of being competitive next year. And if they both come back, it isn't assuring anything that Penn State is going to be back in the mix either. So these are important decisions. But again, I don't think they're, final determinants of, okay, this is where this program is or where this team can get to next season.
In general, as fans, when watching it, previously it was always, you know what, you can't blame the kid for trying to make some money in his chosen profession. And every game he sticks around is potential injury that he'll never get one penny for playing football. Well, that dynamic has changed. Anyway, Jeff, we started this with the announcement that Abdul Carter has said he's going to be going into the draft, as we all knew. I wanted to use that actually as a segue into the game. And another dynamic that has changed, which is we had this whole discussion the last week or so, will he or won't he play? But the fact is, I think we all felt if he had any chance to play, he was going to. And how different is that compared to, you know, going to a bowl game when it would have been, he could have been 100% healthy and might have sat it out. Give him lots of credit. Again, top five draft pick, we know that. Nothing to prove individually. And boy, did he put on a heck of a performance. And the shoulder issue is legitimate. If you watched him just walking off the field, favoring that side. But he played a heck of a game, not 100%.
He did. And you do wonder if that shoulder is healthy, does that fumble recovery end up going his way? We can't definitively say that, but boy, it feels like that could very well be. But yeah, I have to believe that helped his draft stock. I don't know, again, whether you go top five pick regardless, so I'm not sure how much, but I have to believe that there are some GMs and certainly some coaches that watched that performance and knowing that he's basically playing with one arm in that game and willing to go out there for his teammates, that's a guy we want. We want that mentality in our locker room and on our football team above and beyond what we obviously can see in terms of his athletic ability. So not that I think he was playing to enhance his draft stock. And again, I don't know that at the end of the day, in terms of, is he a higher pick because of it? Because again, he's going to be a very high pick anyway, but I do think, you know, it's probably making a few more coaches salivate at the prospect of getting a guy like that in their locker room. And he did. He played lights out, but up and down that lineup, there were a bunch of guys that just played their hearts out, played great games, and deserved a better fate. And again, it's just what I think makes it very, very difficult for Nittany Nation to swallow here on the day after.
It is, but you know, you said about Abdul Carter. He's going to be a top pick whether he had played yesterday or not. Didn't matter. But it's nice to see that kind of character to say, I'm not 100%, but I'm a gamer. But a guy who might have made himself a few dollars, deny Dennis Sutton. Oh, my goodness, Jeff, the interception. That was a defensive end making that interception. Did you realize that?
It was an amazing play. It really was. And, I thought the criticism of Leonard there on the broadcast was a little over the top. He's being too aggressive. He's being aggressive because he's not thinking the defensive back or defensive end is dropping back there and is going to make that kind of a play. That was a huge play. And he had a tremendous game. In his own right, above and beyond the interception. He just was a terror at the line of scrimmage. And, he certainly did nothing but help his draft prospects with his performance. But, it stinks as a fan that we're not going to get to see these guys anymore. Part of why I think everybody wanted Penn State to win. Yeah, you want to win a national title, but also I just wanted to see Tyler Warren play another game. I wanted to see Dennis Sutton and Abdul Carter out there again in a Penn State uniform.
All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter number three. We got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We are talking Penn State football. And, you know, Jeff, you mentioned as we closed out quarter number three, selfishly, you just wanted to see these guys play again. You know, Tyler Warren, Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton. Boy, are you greedy. We got 16 games of it. We've been getting bonus football now for several weeks. And I'm going to go back to – now, we both are huge fans of college football. We love it. Give me more. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. And this was just another example of it. We got to see Tyler Warren 16 times this year, not 12 or 13. And in big games, not just, well, a bowl game where half the players don't show up. And the second part to this, Jeff, is we got so much great football with these playoffs. Yes, I know there were some of those blowouts, but we probably don't get to see that kind of game that we did if we didn't have the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, no, no question about that. And I think, Notre Dame and Penn State and all of the history they bring and the name of the program, the brand name that brings, and having them meet in a playoff game for the right to play for a national title, was just great for college football in general. And then the fact that the game delivered. I mean, it felt like a heavyweight slugfest, and both teams kept delivering what they thought might be knockout blows, and the other team just kept coming back and finding a way to punch right back. And again, it was a wildly entertaining game. I think it was a really good football game played between two really good teams, really good coaches. And again, downside if you're on the losing team is that there's always one team that gets to win those games and one team that gets to lose. And unfortunately for Penn State and very fortunate for Notre Dame, it turned out the way it did on Thursday night in the Orange Bowl.
And Jeff, we were naming, players like Abdul Carter and Denai Dennis Sutton for their performance. I think we got to talk Zaki Wheatley. I mean, he had 16 tackles in this game, an interception, a sack. Now, he's been playing well all year, but what a great performance by him also.
Yeah, absolutely amazing performance. And, he was just phenomenal. And there were moments where he kind of took over the game for Penn State on a defense that is loaded with stars, as we've been talking about. So, I think there's been a lot of guys that have stepped up in a big, big way for this team this season. And, I think that's kind of what made it such a special year is the individual journeys kind of combining to come together to make this such a special journey for the program and for the team as a whole. And, hopefully from Penn State's perspective, it's laying the groundwork for bigger and better things to come. But it's going to be hard to get bigger and better than what this team provided this season.
Well, yeah, Jeff, I want to get back to James Franklin and all this. And, you know, in the first segment we were talking about, and I mentioned, I feel legitimately really bad for James Franklin, because obviously when you're in this profession for so many years, you know, that ultimate goal is the national championship, and you're at a program like Penn State, you know what the expectations are, and everything you do, you're building towards that. And to get this close and fall short, but it's also all the criticism that's now coming. We knew it was coming. You knew everyone who ever said, oh, you know, big game, you got to bet against James Franklin, he'll find a way to lose it. And that's the narrative that's going to go on in addition to this coming up short. So just where does James Franklin go from here? That it's got to be just an emotionally devastating game for him.
Yeah, I think it, I think it is. I think it's a very deflating moment. But I also, I really do think he has a very good handle on the big picture perspective and what it is he has developed here at Penn State. And the one thing he has that I think he doesn't get enough credit for is he constantly has learned, and it's why I really thought Penn State was going to win this game over Notre Dame. And I think I mentioned it on a couple of different broadcasts, is that I gave Penn State the very slight coaching edge, not because I think Marcus Freeman isn't up to the task, just the experience that James Franklin now has under his belt. And to be honest with you, I think to a large degree that played out. I think the coaching edge actually was very slightly in Penn State's favor last night. They just didn't get the execution in a couple of spots where, again, you had defensive players just falling down. Well, that's, I mean, nobody's coaching that. And then obviously, again, not to, to dwell on it, but Aller's decision ends up, you know, really costing them at least the opportunity to go to overtime and see how that plays out. Not all top five losses are equal, I guess, is kind of where I come down. This was not on James Franklin and to me, and I'm with you. I can't even pick a particular spot where it's like, oh, man, I'm not sure that was the right decision. Every time, you know, they had that fourth and short out near midfield, I'm like, oh, I know you want to be aggressive. Please, please don't do it. And he did. They punted and pinned them down, I think, at about the 10-yard line. Like, that was the right decision. To me, they made all the right decisions. The calls were there. They gave the players an opportunity to win it. And the players executed very well, save but for, you know, four or five plays over the course of the game that you know, two or three really came back to haunt them.
Yeah, they did. And I think as fans, we were looking at this season with those star players with their third year in the program, or, you know, I know Tyler Warren wasn't part of that 2002 class, but you had a star in Nick Singleton, in Abdul Carter, in Drew Aller. And it again is going to come down to how many of these guys move on. But I think this was a season that you had to point at. And, you know, it seemed like all the pieces were in place except that wide receiver, big exception there. So it's, and I know it's still the wounds are open, you know, for this game, Jeff, but those are the things that these decisions are going to be made pretty quickly. You know, do you enter the portal? Do you enter the NFL draft, which I think is the bigger issue with the star players here? This next year's team could really go either way with several players having to make a decision.
Yeah, and listen, I think they've got to we got to see what the coaching staff looks like next year too. I think there's a lot of folks just kind of presuming that it's going to be status quo. I think that's a distinct possibility, but you got to wait and see how that all shakes out. I think Marcus Hagans is rightfully and understandably coming under some heat. And I think they have a legitimate conversation they need to have there, because whether it's recruiting or development or a combination of both, I mean, that was glaring that was the area that that they needed work on from last year. And I know they got more plays downfield this year, but that was Tyler Warren that Drew Aller and Tyler Warren. That wasn't the receivers by and large creating that. I'm not advocating one way or the other with a coaching change there. I'm just saying that has to be addressed. That is clearly, if you're trying to point to one thing other than a decision by a player in a moment, that the position group that has to get better for this team to take the final step now and win a national title is very clearly wide receiver.
Well, here's the tough part of that decision, though, Jeff, is they've been changing wide receiver coaches every couple years. Is it do you have to just find some stability there? I remember when Troutwine first came in as the offensive line coach, first couple years that were being questioned. We constantly questioned the offensive line. Well, here we are a couple years later saying, they're going to lose some guys, but we feel pretty good about where they're going to be next year. Is it just a case you got to give the guy a little more time? I don't know. That's why James Franklin makes the big bucks.
Yeah, and that's really all I'm saying. They have to have the conversation and a clear, real assessment of where they are, where they need to get to, and then how they go about it. I mean, and they've got to execute whatever that game plan is so that they get some big play production from the receiving core next season.
They definitely do. So that's going to be a fascinating story to follow through this offseason. But speaking of the coaching staff, there were three new coordinators with special teams.
Yep.
Don't want to forget that, Jeff. But got to say, they probably made home run hires on both defensive and offensive coordinators. And at least at the time now, it doesn't look like there'll be a change there for now.
No, I don't think so. And I certainly hope not, because I mean, I've been saying all along since they made the hires, I think they have two elite coordinators here. We keep talking about Penn State being and trying to be an elite program. I think this was an elite team. I think Penn State was one of the best three or four teams in the country and capable of winning the whole thing. And I do think that getting both of those guys back next year is a big part of the equation for Penn State to at least have an opportunity to put itself in a similar position next year.
One last quick thought, Jeff, and this was something that I was listening to an interview with a national college football guy prior to the game yesterday, and the conversation was about four blue blood programs in this Final Four, but who did the best job recruiting overall in general? And he said, well, James Franklin, because you got to understand, Texas, Notre Dame, Ohio State, national brand names, Austin, Texas, recruiting in the Texas area, Notre Dame, the national name, Ohio State. What it takes to be able to recruit to Penn State and just get to this point, this Final Four, we got to remember, is still a pretty impressive achievement. All right, Jeff, that's it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.